Okay, I've started the recording, and I'm just going to leave on this for a minute or so. So it's a header on the video that we'll be putting up on YouTube.
Okay.
So thanks you. Thanks everybody for coming. Thanks Yossi for suggesting we do this. We've got a bunch of folks, and so clearly there's some interest. Before I start the whole thing, I just want to remind you that in three weeks, right? For 3 weeks on February 20th, Thayer is going to talk to us about exactly what we're talking about today from a Palestinian perspective. He's going to try to explain to us whether Third Intifada is on its way. With that, I am going to get out of the stop share. And I'm going to start, I think, by going to Yossi, who suggested this meeting, to sort of outline the range of issues that we're dealing with.
Okay, so you want me to, like, opening of something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
After Netanyahu government was formed, I was claiming, because of the attempt and process to change and weaken the judiciary in Israel and pass all kind of laws that benefits Netanyahu personally and also weakening the Supreme Court, that he assumes that there will be a mass demonstrations against this in Israel, that he will try to neutralize this by attacking in general the Palestinians, with a strong belief that big part of the oppositions, like Lapid or Gantz, will basically back him on whatever he does to the Palestinians. And today in Israeli parliament, was approved that he was right. So under his government, they initiated the attack in Jenin and fabricated that they have a knowledge of these people from the Islamic Jihad. They're going to do a mass terrorist attack inside Israel, and therefore it was a preventive act. And they sent hundreds of soldiers and policemen to Jenin, knowingly that it's going to be a clash. There was also a lie. They said they were under heavy shooting the army and all this. And surprisingly, no single Israeli soldier got even wounded, not even a scratch, after describing it was a heavy fighting. When you have a heavy fighting, you have also casualties on both sides. You can have a fighting and the casualties is 9-0. It's a lie. So whatever they did there, he might predict that there will be some kind of retaliation or something happened. Some missiles have been shot from Gaza. And then came the Palestinian from East Jerusalem and killed 7 people in a synagogue. And then things got escalated, where they start talking about having all kind of laws of punishment, not just the sealing of the house and destroying the house, but passing a law. So today in the Israeli parliament, with back of 89 parliament members, not just the 64 of Netanyahu, 89, extra 25 from so-called oppositions, a law that if you have been a terrorist or you consider to be a terrorist activist, whatever this is mean, because you know, if you oppose occupation, they can accuse you of supporting terrorism, whatever, your citizenship can be taken away from you, and you can be, now we're talking about those who are Israeli citizens, because citizenship you can take only from those who are Israeli. So the other word, the law is to take the citizenship from the terrorists or the terrorist activist. And in addition, they will be deported to the West Bank on Gaza if you're a citizen of Israel. This is like a pretext, and now this was voted by 89 parliament members. And somebody in Haaretz wrote a response to this article. They saying, now we know the true, who is the right wing in Israel. They're actually the number of right wing parliament members. Mm-hmm. By having 89 against 8. They didn't say, of course, from the Arab parties. I don't know about the Labour Party, what they did, because there's no reported what the Labour Party voted for. This is Netanyahu, who is, I can say, a smart politician. To try to neutralize the opposition on one issue and try to consolidate their support on actions that he's doing, and basically trying to push away the agenda, to dominate the agenda on the Palestinian issue, knowingly that a party like Yesh Atid or Gantz party will close rank behind him. And he's quite clever by doing this, but I feel like this is what he's going to do. You see all these oppositions, you see this, where can he find unity with these oppositions? Of course, on the Palestinian issue, on the oppression, fighting terrorism and all this stuff, and making some very extreme anti-democratic law. It's passed one, it's in order to pass a law in Israeli parliament, you have to have 3 votes. One vote passed by 89, so it's gonna be easy, 2 more votes to pass. It's not so-called controversial. There will not be a fight in the parliament, except maybe from Arab party and maybe few progressive Jewish parliament member, and that's it. And this is also the beginning of the agenda of basically getting rid of all the Arab parliament member in the next election. So if it will be election and only Jewish vote, his parliamentary bloc will increase and make him an unchallenged leadership of the Likud and all his right, extreme right wing to dominate the Israeli politics. Okay.
So okay, thanks.
What I say, what's actually really behind this of why the escalation was done. You know, maybe on a note is that Blinken came there, and after hearing the statement by Biden and Blinken, you see that there is no really change in the US foreign policy. The Israeli government or Israel is an ally. It doesn't matter who sits there, what kind of a creature sitting in this government, the response is almost the same. Condemning the terrorist attack against civilians and completely silent that were 144 Palestinians killed in 2022 and already 30 in 2023. Nothing, not saying even one word about this, you know. So,
and okay. This is true. Okay. Thank you for that introduction, Yossi. And I'm going to ask, first of all, somebody called in by phone, 424-254.
Yeah, it's Lillian.
Lillian.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi, Lillian.
Say your name again so I can get
Lillian.
It.
It's Lillian.
Okay, very good. Okay, so I'm going to now ask Dick whether he wants to bring up other issues besides those that Yossi has put on the table. Yossi basically put on the table that the Netanyahu government is trying to become a government of a unitary government. So it would be the only power in the whole country. Dick.
Well, I haven't really thought it out in detail, but I did have, I heard a couple interesting broadcasts today. One was on Democracy Now! This morning, where they had Rashid Khalidi and the woman who is the head of B'Tselem. And they made the point that, well, yes, Ben-Gvir and so forth, they're definitely fascistic, but the Netanyahu and his government are not fundamentally different than the governments that came before. You know, they even made the point that in the United States, where they have really full support, except for a little finger pointing, they still have broad and strong support from the United States. The weapons are still flowing. The diplomatic and immunity at the United Nations is still flowing. And it's been that way all along. So they made the point that the difference is more one of quantity than quality. They didn't think it was a qualitative change in the government. The other podcast I listened to was by Rania Khalik. She's an American who lives in Lebanon, and she talks, this one talked all about the Israeli, the situation in Israel, and she made points that were similar to Rashid Khalidi. So that would be my comment. How much is really a qualitative change and how much is a quantitative change? I think it's more, that's my remarks.
Okay. Before I call on Tony, let me ask Dick to expand on one little thing. When you say things are the same, that you're talking about international relations, the U.S.-Israel relation.
Well,
you're not talking about how it is for people living there.
The occupation has gone on for 50 years. Gaza has been under basically siege for, about 15 years. The people in the West Bank have been under military occupation with areas A, B, and C for, 30 years. So that really hasn't changed. Where my son-in-law, who's going to talk in 3 weeks, grew up in a Palestinian village in the Galilee. It was a totally segregated environment before, and it's a totally segregated environment right now. Everyone in his village is Palestinian, and the only people who are not Palestinians live in a guarded fortress. It's like a settlement, even though it's in the Galilee and it's occupied by settlers. And they have zero contact or relations with anybody in the village that surrounds this settlement. So I don't know how much has fundamentally changed in the West Bank, in Gaza, in the Galilee, or for that matter, East Jerusalem. What are the qualitative changes that this government has made that would make such a big difference? I think it's quantitative. They're more fascistic, but it isn't as if it's gone from black to white. It's more from dark charcoal to black.
But the 100,000 or more people who came out protesting, the biggest protest in 20 years or 40 years.
That's good. I admire that.
Okay. Tony, you had your hand up.
Yeah, today B'Tselem released a report that said that the murder, the number of Palestinians that had been killed by the Israelis in 2022 was the most since 2004. And it looks like at the rate that we're going, there's probably going to be the same, if not worse, murder ratio for this year. There's 33 people killed already since the first of the year. This passage of this legislation that Yossi just talked about looks like a clear attempt to separate out those Israeli-Palestinian citizens who are in sympathy with any resistance to the Israeli state. I don't know exactly what it is. Thayer would probably be able to give us a better proportion, but I would estimate 25 to 30% of the people are in sympathy with resistance to the Israeli state. Whether that's in favor of a two-state solution or not, I can't tell. But it seems clear that that's an attempt to rid the citizenship of those people, especially when you see something like terrorist activist. I mean, how do you define that? Well, it's the people who are doing the arresting who define it. And you get arrested and you get put in jail and you don't see a lawyer and you don't know what the charges are. And if you don't speak Hebrew, you never read what the charges are. So I suspect that this is the beginning of, for lack of a better word, purges. I think it's an institutional one. And even 100,000 people getting out and protesting are not enough to change this majority that is now in control of it. The second thing I want to say is that most recent Israeli Supreme Court decision suggests too that the Supreme Court is aligning itself with this very right-wing majority in the government.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Does anyone have any direct response to Tony before I pass the floor to Uri? Is your hand up, Chris?
No, I'm just...
Okay. Okay, Uri, you're muted.
Okay, can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Okay, so I just want to add a couple of pointers to the conversation. First of all, last time when I spoke to you guys, I mentioned that you have to remember that all of them are Zionists. In Israel, in order to be accepted, you have to say I'm a Zionist. So the 89 members of parliament, the three quarters, they always wear the tag of I'm a Zionist proudly. So it's not surprising, because when it comes to, this is like a call of action, and Bibi is very smart. He said, you do with me or against me? And since the bad guys are attacking us, you have to be with me. So he puts them on the horns of the dilemma. And since Gantz and Lapid want to be the next replacement, they have to go along and say, no, we hate these terrorists. So that's kind of like a tactical move that they cannot really avoid. Now, whatever they're passing in the Israeli parliament, it's meaningless. It's to pacify the Israeli public in general, because the last year and a half when the other government was in power, Bibi always said that these guys are weak and they're not doing enough against the terrorism, against the Palestinians and all that thing. So now when he's the boss, he has to show that he's doing something. So whatever he's doing is meaningless. All the people in the Israeli apparatus told him that all these things are meaningless. If anything, you're going to get more people who are going to spontaneously resist. It's not going to be a member of organization. This is a people who are going to be upset because you threw them out of their houses, you blocked their houses, you demolished their houses, you did all the other things. So in other words, they say, whatever you're doing, which is a bravado, it's counterproductive to if you really want to pacify these people. So this is one point. The most important thing for everybody to remember this conversation, Bibi is fighting for his freedom. This is the thing that runs the show. Bibi knows he's going to jail. He knows that Ehud Olmert, former prime minister, went, the former president went to jail, the former finance minister went to jail. He knows he's going to jail. And Bibi is going to do anything possible for him not to go to jail, including taking the state of Israel apart. And this is the motto running behind. This is the clear issue, because Bibi in the last 15 years did a lot of shit, but he never pushed it to that point because he was never under this threat. This threat becomes imminent. And this is really what's running the whole show behind. Anything else is obfuscation, a smokescreen. Just remember that. That's really the main issue. He's willing to tear down the state of Israel in order to avoid going to jail. So that's one. Now, I wanna throw a couple of other things. First of all, I don't know if you saw, but there's about 80 law professors in the United States signed a declaration, a petition, basically protesting the fact that Israel, or the Netanyahu, is trying to get to take Israel to be a non-democratic state. I send you a copy of that declaration. There is also another thing that nobody talks about really loud, but that's at the background. Abu Mazen is 88 years old. He's a chain smoker. He doesn't have a lieutenant, and he doesn't have a designated successor. The guy can go imminently. I mean, any day of the week or the month or the whole thing, he can be. The moment he does, there's going to be a very fierce fight in the West Bank between 3, 4, 5 factions. Each one of them has the arms and has the muscle to take over. It's going to be a succession fight. It's going to be bloody. Israel is not going to escape it. So in other words, Israel has no solution to that thing. They do not have any real scenario for the day after Mazen, and they pray. They pray for his well-being. 88-year-old man who smokes, who chain smokes. So this is really a time bomb that's been hanging over Israel for the past few years, and they do not have any solution, any idea how to handle it. Whatever they say or they talk, they avoid it like it's never going to happen. So that's another point that I want to make sure that all of you keep in the back of the mind with regards to that situation. Also, another point, Bibi has to show, unlike the previous government that he was criticizing, that they were weak on the terrorists, on the Palestinians and everything. He has to show that he's strong. So all these moves and all these changes in the law and all that thing actually are PR to show to the populace that he is really in control. He's running the show. He's hitting the terrorists, quote unquote, and he's going to be your protector. All of it is false. All of it is PR. But a lot of the Israeli people, they buy the propaganda. This is a pure propaganda. Because as somebody said, 130 people were assassinated by the Israeli forces last year, which is kind of like escalation, as if Israel is trying to actually light fire on the West Bank to start a third intifada, because then all bets are off. They can do anything they want because it's a war. And like in the United States, when you do a war, there's no criticism. Let them do whatever they want. And Bibi is actually pushing towards that, because one of his scenarios under this disguise is going to actually stop or postpone his trial. So that's another element that you need to understand. That's at the back of the whole thing, because as I told you, in the past 15 years, Bibi made the decision they're not going to solve this conflict. They're not interested in a solution. They're going to manage the conflict. Remember this term. They are managing the conflict. Translation, we're going to kill a few hundreds Palestinian terrorists, and we're going to allow for a few dozen, 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 Israeli dead every year, civilians, because that's an acceptable price for us, because we do not want to do the other thing, which is a whole lot worse for us. So always remember that thing. Israel is in a phase in the last 15 years of managing the conflict. No solution, no interest in solution. They don't. Everything that you hear, it's propaganda. The two-state solution has been dead and buried long time ago. Blinken is trying to make sure that Bibi doesn't start another war, another fire in the Middle East. That's the last thing the United States wants to handle. They have enough on their hands with Russia, Ukraine, as it is. If you start a war in the Middle East and you get the Iranians involved, God forbid what's going to happen in the United States. So this is really the effort that they're trying to actually pacify something, figure some way. I hope that Blinken is smart enough to do that, but I don't think it's humanly possible to do anything about it. Again, Bibi doesn't want to go to jail, and he'll do whatever it takes, including taking the state of Israel apart. Now, he's basically what he's trying to do, he's trying to change the system by which judges are being nominated, elected in Israel.
All right, just a moment. Let me interrupt you. Somebody's got, has not muted themselves. Will you please mute yourself and keep background noise out of the way? Thanks.
Oh, okay. So basically the whole attempt, he wants to change the way the system of selecting judges is done, and they want to shift. It was some kind of a compromise that they did 70 years ago by which they kind of gave the political people some say, but ultimately they didn't give them the ultimate say. The way he's doing it is basically shifting, you try to shift the selection so more politicians would be involved, and this way they can choose their own judges. And if you know anything about democracy, this is the most delicate thing. If you have fair judges, and this is, in my opinion, what saved us 2 years ago from the attempt on January 6th, we had enough fair-minded judges. Israel is trying to change the whole thing, and in Israel, it would be a whole lot faster. Most of them will cooperate willingly because. So this is just a few pointers that I just wanted to throw into this thing, into this conversation, for people to carry the back of your mind, because that really explains all of a sudden, because Bibi, the last 15 years, he was trying not to do anything too radical. Right now, he threw in the gauntlet. Now he's doing anything he needs to do. So thanks.
Thank you, Uri. Let me ask a question. You say that because Netanyahu is afraid of going to jail, he's talking and bending the whole system. Would it be a good thing to just drop all the things against Netanyahu, all the charges?
Jeff, you're touching a conversation that has been going in Israel in the past 5 years. Some people say, and I supported this, guys, 5 years ago, give him, get out of jail, tell him, hey, you and your wife and the kid, you go to the United States, never come back to Israel, and we never met you, forget about anything. No charges, nothing. You go to the United States, give $250,000 lectures and leave happily thereafter, leave us alone. Except that was just one of the ideas, and most people in Israel says, no, we're going to go, and we put you in jail the same way we did to Olmert and Katzav and Hirzon. So what you're saying makes perfect sense, except.
Thank you, Lori. Does someone want to go next, or should I call on someone?
There's a noise background. There's a background noise somewhere.
Yeah, somebody's got a radio or a TV going. And Jeff, you and Uri are the only ones that are unmuted.
Jeff, I think you're the person who has the background noise.
I'll mute myself as soon as I get another person to speak. Does anyone want to talk, or do you have your hand up, Victor?
He does, but he's muted. He doesn't understand.
Okay. Randy, do you have something to add to this?
Not in the face of the wisdom that's here in the group. I am interested in sort of having an idea, though. You know, so much of the public media, apart from something like Democracy Now! Or something like that, is just so fixated on the Israeli deaths that happened on Friday. And I guess what is the two-minute elevator speech or the 30-second elevator speech that we can give that will really redirect people's thinking? Because right now, I think it's been very difficult to have any kind of conversations with people because they just want to point to the Israeli civilians who were killed.
Oh, Okay. Does anyone want to answer the question? Does the protests... Let me ask the question first, sorry. The protests in the United States against these legal changes, the judicial changes in Israel, does that make any difference at all? Uri, take it away.
In my opinion, it's marginally influencing, because one of the things that Bibi reads very well, he reads the newspaper, he reads the media, he understands the media, and he realizes the winds are shifting. And so it's marginal. Now, the 30 seconds conversation, I think that if you want to do something like that in the United States, Randy, you need basically to explain to people that the Israeli-Palestinian is akin to the whites killing the blacks in the United States, because they can and they can get away with it. At least, generally speaking, in the bigger picture. It's obviously it's not true all the time, and things have changed in the last 5 years, and Floyd and all that thing. But essentially, since Rodney King, or even before that, black people are being killed, and pretty much there are no consequences. Similar to that conversation, that's what's happening. The Israelis are killing Palestinians, and when you kill a Jew, my God, you have to stop the world. When you kill a Palestinian, it doesn't count. So this is kind of like a basic idea. What if you're looking for 30 seconds elevator conversation, Randy?
Thank you.
Let me respond to that, actually, that the number of Palestinians and then killed each year by the army, and the number of blacks killed each year by the police in the United States is in the same order of a few hundred. But there are 42 million blacks in America, and there's only 7 million Palestinians. So there's a factor of seven, and it doesn't fit that well together. Okay, Chris, do you have anything to say? Victor, you're unmuted.
Jeff, can you hear me? Jeff, can you hear me?
We can hear you, Victor.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. I don't. I'm just very interested to hear what everyone else has to say, but I think that all of you have a lot more information, and that's what I'm listening for.
Victor?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good, good, good. I just want to clear the definition of what means terrorism. The Palestinians are not terrorists. They are, how we call it, resistance. That we call it the resistance, the occupation. The Israeli are the terrorists. We have to put it clear. They are resisting the terrorism of the occupied army. That's what I call it. That was the same in Europe, and we have the same thing here. They were resisting, and Germany was the terrorist. We have to make the definition correctly. They came to right now to. We call it, I have to speak in English, in Spanish to understand it. Okay, I'm confused in language. Two representatives of the American government came to Israel, and in the moment they came, Israel attacked Iran, attacked Syria, and that is a fact. So that's a fact. There's no argue about that. That's a fact. They're denying, no denying it, but it's a fact. The Israeli and the American are preparing an attack to Iran. They are doing it because they needed to do it. And in order to control what we call it, the Middle East, in order to control the Middle East, we have to control Iran and the Hezbollah in Lebanon. And this is a pact also. So we're preparing to attack Iran one way or another. We are practicing. Israel are practicing with the airplane attacking the continuous. So there's nothing new if it's going to be a war between Iran with the help of the United States. That's a fact also. So it's not that the previous government was doing the same thing. Nothing changed. Bibi just in the, he's just following what he's supposed to obey. There's two kind of Israel, that is true. One, obeying the United States, everything they want. And the other one, they want in, the other one, the other side, we want to create the imperial of King David. And they can do it because they got the weapons, they got the strength, and they got anything they can do it, and the money to do it. So, if anybody want to discuss this fact, please discuss it because it's a fact. I leave it up to you. I'm done.
Judy.
Okay. I want to say, sort of responding to Dick, I know this is always his point for years and years, but I also heard the democracy. Oh, I read it later, but yes, they made the point that things are the same, but I think they were also very concerned that things are getting worse and that the court thing would make it worse and that there's even more killing now. And you can call that quantitative and not qualitative, but I think you represented that show as there being, well, there's really nothing different now. But I think that they agreed that there were things different and getting worse. I have a completely different point. I know everybody here, one of you experts told me long ago that Yossi Elfer, this guy is no good and he's bad. But I kind of read that a little bit. And he made some really weird points. He said that one of his main things was that Israel could have done much worse and they were really kind of restrained in the response. And he had all these reasons, one being the visit by the ambassador and other reasons. But he made his point about Davos and their economic guy that went to Davos and came back and said, you're going to get punished internationally by the banking things if you don't stop this and tone this down. And so he was, I don't know, I'm just reading what he says, but he says somebody's already pulled all their money out of Israel, and that's a really point, and all the economists in Israel kind of agree with him but wouldn't really say it. And so I just want, that's my thing, that Alfer, I don't know, you know who he is, anybody? I mean, But this Davos thing, he said that's going to be the only thing that's going to stop Israel is economic concerns from the world economy. I'm done.
Thank you, Judy. Uri, before I call you, I want to see where the roof is. Anything to add?
This is a rifle from my grandfather, Houston, Montana. I wrote to my relatives some months ago telling them that I had seen a particularly heinous video of a settler going after Palestinians and an Israeli woman, Jewish woman. And I said to her,
Ruth, before you continue, can everybody mute so we're not going to hear the background except Ruth? Because we hear this background. So if you don't speak, maybe just mute.
It's Jeff has muted himself. That's where the noise is coming from. Sorry, Ruth.
And I had suggested to her that we're coming up to 75 years and the feelings are getting even more intense. Palestinians seeing they're in even worse shape. And I don't know why I mentioned that, but it was just a blindness on the part of Zionist Israeli Jews, that they didn't see and couldn't feel. Well, she got angry at me, you know, And I said I was hoping our family wouldn't be involved in such heinous things. So she was insulted that I would even suggest that the 75 members of my family who are there would even, you know, participate in such a thing. They're Orthodox for the most part. But Randy asked about an elevator speech. And the only thing I could think to say is it's coming on 75 years. And they're in worse shape than they have ever been. And so the feelings are just so much more intense. And it just hasn't been recognized by the Israeli Jews. They don't know what the Palestinians suffer through. They just don't know.
Thank you, Ruth.
Pay attention.
Uri.
I just want to give a quick answer to Judy. You raised a very, very important point. The economic issue is a very important thing. In the last few days, Bibi heard from a bunch of economists, three former chief of the Israeli bank. They heard from about 20 other leading people, and basically they scared him and they told him basically what you're doing is gonna do what is gonna cause what happened to Turkey, what happened to Hungary, what happened to Poland. The world is, what happened to, what's her name? The former prime minister of England, 45 days. He understands very well that he cannot fool the international markets. And once the international market decides that you cannot get even fair justice protecting rights of ownership, this is really what the markets are concerned, they're going to pull the money out of Israel. And all the bluster of Bibi and all the changes in the Knesset are meaningless. It can actually bring Israel to its knees. And this is, Bibi understands it very well. And the proof, a day later, 2 days later, he came out with a very strong statement to the newspapers denying everything that these people tell. He said, you are creating a panic and all that thing. That means it registered, he understands it, he's scared. That's the thing that scares him the most. He doesn't want to lose the world trust economically in Israel. And this is really a point that you mentioned, Judy, which is a very relevant point, because they are putting the pressure exactly there. And he heard it already, and it's a drip, drip, but it's going to get a whole torrent of water. So thank you,
because I just read this, and of course, I didn't really even quite understand it, but this guy was, and so I'm so glad you told exactly the details, because thank you for clarifying that, because he kind of outlined it in general too, so I'm glad for the information.
Judy, where did Yossi Alper give this statement?
I don't know, he's this big expert on Israel. The website, Uri seems to know her too. I don't know. I guess it's known.
I'll Google it and search for it. Thank you.
Randy has his hand up. Before I call on him, I want to ask Uri an issue. You said that the thing that's most important to Bibi is staying out of jail. And you also said the thing that's most important to Bibi is keeping the economy strong. You're muted.
You said it in the right order. One is getting out of jail. The second one, not crashing the Israeli economy, in that order. But it's a close second.
Okay, Randy.
Okay, my question is regarding this idea of the collapse of the Israeli economy or the international banking system turning its back on Israel, toward Israel. I find that a little bit hard to imagine, simply because the Israeli economy is so integrated into the world economy, and also because the U.S. would, I would imagine, not look favorably on that type of pressure being placed on Israel. And of course, the U.S. has a lot of ability to pressure the World Bank and other international banking interests. It's just hard for me to imagine that happening.
Okay, Yossi has his hand up, and so does Tony, but I saw Yossi's first, so Yossi, you go.
I think we have to separate some two issues here, because the impression, or maybe some people, that the pressure on the Israeli government is because of the Palestinian issue. It's not at all. There is a pressure on Israel because they attempt to change or weaken the judiciary system in Israel vis-a-vis the Supreme Court. Most people who are demonstrating in Israel in the last three weekends have nothing to do with what happened in the occupied territories. It's all internal. They are always black in a demonstration, what they call the black, that they cannot have democracy with occupations. And they want to bring the issue of occupation and human rights is to be part of the discussion, what is democracy? Right now they're in minority, but they are there every demonstrations. Now to the point of the issue of the maybe Israeli economy collapse, I personally believe it's a lot of exaggerations there. And here what I tell you why. The world power, economic, the European Union, United States, and other countries, China, they don't have no problem dealing and doing economic business with dictatorship in the Middle East, an authoritarian regime like Turkey and Poland and Hungary. Hungary and Poland is still part of the European Union in spite of anti-democratic laws which they pass there. And the economy of Poland and Hungary is not collapsing because of this. And I think it's a little bit exaggeration, and it's not healthy. And the reason it's not healthy, because if Netanyahu gonna push for anti-democratic process, Supreme Court and this, and the Israeli economy will not collapse, then he'll call the bluff of all those who are saying it. You know, we have to be very careful not to say just because somebody is saying it, it does not mean, Randy is absolutely right. The Israeli economy is very much integrated with the US, with European Union and China and India and Russia, and they're all doing it. And if there will be something, United States, you saw in Blinken, he came to Netanyahu to speak with a military and political ally. This how they respond, the way they respond. They condemn the Palestinians attack, killing civilians, and completely silent about the Israeli army killing civilians, which much bigger number, because this ally, they call Israel, is overriding all other issues in the United States. In other words, he's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch, and therefore he will get our support. And they discuss about Iran, they discuss about maybe you can give a little bit few weapons to Ukraine and all this stuff. He came to speak to a friend. This is what he's all about. And sometimes they're saying you this nonsense, or sometimes we have disagreement with a friend, but he's still a friend, you know, it's still an ally. And I don't think that this ally, the economy of this ally will collapse just because you'll make. Today, Netanyahu succeed in very important. I know that Uri said it, meaning it's not meaningless. The attack of the Palestinians in East Jerusalem, he's not even a citizen of Israel. Most Palestinians who live in East Jerusalem, they're not citizens. They're permanent residents, and he was not. But the law applied to Israeli citizens. And to who? To a Palestinian who is Israeli citizens. And he used this attack to get the support of the oppositions so they might use this law to disqualify an Arab parliament member for running for the election or to disqualify the entire party under this term of this law. This is really what behind this. So when come to the next election, he's gonna increase the majority from 64 to 74 in order to have consolidate power. And those fools from Yesh Atid and Gantz, because they are anti-Palestinian by themselves, they voted what he wanted. So he might take a break and slow down a little bit because he already achieved very important laws that he wanted to pass, that maybe without what happened in East Jerusalem would be more difficult to pass. But right now he used this very well, very effective to pass this law, which is unprecedented in Israeli history, to take people's citizenship under pretext of fighting terrorism. It never was before like this. And even to deport them to the West Bank and Gaza, you know, and Israeli citizens. And he know exactly why they're doing it for the next election, so they will not run or whatever, to disqualify them. And you'll find, you know, he's very much aware about the criticism, so he might slow down a little bit. And, you know, they're already 1 month in power, and so far they did not touch the Supreme Court. They did not change. You know, the only meaningful law they pass is what happened today, which is anti-Palestinian law. And for this, he got a great support in Israeli parliament, not just from his government, not just from his bloc, you know. So I think we have to be careful on the issue of the economy. It's not gonna make Israeli collapse. There is no interest of European Union or United States to see the Israeli economy collapse. They're not going for this. They will not do it, you know. It's an ally. It's very important. It's a military political ally of the Western world that include European Union, United States, and they see them. This is our ally in the Middle East. They keep repeating it's the only democracy in the Middle East, although 5 million Palestinians living under dictatorship. This doesn't count when they're making those rhetoric. Okay, this is my two cents about this.
Is this judge thing going to go through for sure? I mean, court, the thing about the court, you know, is that going to go through that?
And it's just gonna be- you know, they have the parliamentary majority of 64, but in what speed Netanyahu going to push it? This is, you know, he's very clever. He sometimes know where is the boundaries. And he's using it and he's testing every day the boundaries. And today he capitalized on what happened in East Jerusalem and very quickly passed this law of against Israeli citizens. Nothing even to do with Palestinians in occupied territories. You know, this was something that he wanted to do it. And when come to the judiciary, he might take his time. He's not in a rush, you know. He have a solid majority of 64. He knows that he can use, and he's thinking about next election already to increase his majority in the parliament.
When is the next election?
Well, it'll take 4 years. But
oh, 4 years? He's maybe, in there for sure.
Maybe, let's put this way. If he gonna succeed to change, let's say he's going to go and maybe change the compositions of the committee that selected the judges by creating a majority of the politicians. And you know what is his big argument? And not only him, they said, look, in United States, who's selecting the Supreme Court justice? only politicians, not professionals, and the politician voting on him, on the judge, he or she. So what do you want from me? We're going to do exactly what you're doing in the United States. And in the United States, the president of the United States, Blinken, and even the US Congress said, you know, Bibi got a point. So it's not gonna be so bad. So why to make an economic sanction against Israel when he copied the US system of selecting judges, you know? So when you select judges and the criticism around the world is not so bad, then you'd change the composition of the Supreme Court without passing a law. If he created a composition in a Supreme Court, like in the US, a solid majority of conservative, then they can disqualify the Arab party for running for election. And Netanyahu said, I didn't do it. The Supreme Court did it. The Supreme Court that you, the world, trying to defend, they decided, I didn't do it, you know?
Tony, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it took so long. Let me put my hand down. just a couple of things, Judy, from my reading of it, the Israeli Knesset has got a little bit more control over the Supreme Court decisions than the United States Congress does. In the US, you have to pass both houses of Congress, and depending on how significant the legislation is, you might need to get a really strong coalition in both houses in order to overcome a Supreme Court decision. It's a lot easier to happen in Israel, even though it is essentially the same. My point is, look, first of all, I want to ask a question of both Uri and Yossi, and I will ask the same question of Thayer when next I talk to him. Who should we be talking to over in Israel now to give us a sense of the opposition? Secondly, Biden is a declared Zionist. Blinken is a declared Zionist. You're not going to get them to change, but maybe we've got some weak spots in Congress. What about the new congressperson who replaced Karen Bass? What about Padilla and Dianne Feinstein? You know, you write letters to them, you can be as specific as possible. My last letter to Padilla and Feinstein was about Shadi Khoury being arrested in the middle of the night, and the charges against him never really materialized. And I wrote specifics in that letter to them, and I got nothing but mishmash for a whole page back from Padilla. I've yet to hear from Feinstein. I think what we should do is a concentrated effort to start working on one or two issues that we find significant, start drafting letters, or at least outlining letters that each one of us can then modify, given our own information and our own feelings about things, and just start inundating these damn people with it and trying to get some kind of response from them or set up a meeting with them. You're not going to change things in Israel, but you might be able to change things here in the US. And you got to start somewhere. If Feinstein doesn't run again, Katie Porter might be a logical person to go after. So
Katie Porter wins.
It certainly wouldn't be Adam Schiff, because I know Schiff enough when I lived in Glendale. He ain't going to back off from his support for Israel. So that's all I've got to say.
Well, I strongly support your idea, Tony, of becoming politically active. We were politically active in the past, and we've had meetings with congressmen. I think it's the suggestion is good. We should pick that up again. And in fact, Tom Friedman says the only influence on what Israel is doing to itself is, he says, Biden, but it's basically the American people who will be pushing Biden. Anyway, Dick, you got your hand up.
I'm going to talk a little bit about Tom Friedman first. I read his detailed report in the LA Times, in the New York Times, and he never used the word occupation. He never used the word apartheid. What he said is the new government will upset the equilibrium, meaning the political balance that allows the Palestinian Authority to retain some stature. So he was afraid that Ben-Gvir and the new government will fracture the equilibrium, and it'll be harder to control the Palestinians. He doesn't say that, but I think that's his message. I know he had a whole long discussion with Peter Barnard, and I want to hear that, because Peter Barnard, I'm sure, will really push him hard to find out what he meant. But I want to talk about this issue that other people have raised about Israel, as the U.S. supports Israel because it's the only democracy in the Middle East. And as people have pointed out, it's not much of a democracy, you know, with 3 million people in the West Bank under military occupation, 2 million in Gaza, I don't know, 300,000 or 400,000, 500,000 in East Jerusalem, and segregation within the Green Line. But I don't think democracy is really has much to do with U.S. foreign policy. It's just kind of a convenient thing that you can occasionally invoke, like they have in the Ukraine. But even in the Ukraine, Zelensky has outlawed almost all of the opposition parties and any opposition media. So it's not really that democratic anymore in the Ukraine, but it's a convenient talking point. It's just a propaganda point. And the United States is fully at home supporting all of the kingdoms in the Gulf, like Dubai and Qatar and Saudi Arabia. It supports Egypt, which is a total autocracy. It supports Jordan, which is an oppressive monarchy. It supports Tunisia, which is a new oppressive king, or Morocco, which is a kingdom. There's no qualms about the U.S. supporting total dictatorships with military and diplomatic support. So Israel is in the process of sliding into that type of a government, but I don't think this is an issue for the United States. They'll come up with some other rationale, or they'll simply maintain the fiction like they have already that it's just a democracy. So I don't, as for how to raise this point with elected officials, I'll defer to other people because I'm totally skeptical that that will work, but maybe I'm wrong. If people have a strategy that they think will find a Betty McCollum or someone in the local congressional representatives, more power to you,
Okay, thanks, Dick. Uri, I see your hand up, but before that, I want to ask our colleague who's on the phone, that 424 number, whether she has anything to add and contribute. Okay, no answer there. So, Uri, the floor is yours.
So, first of all, Dick, I agree with you. I'm skeptical about that conversation also. The United States is running an empire. So whether you're a dictator or not, if you play along with them, that's fine. So I'm skeptical that any of the politicians we know will make the big difference. Now, the whole state of Israel got rattled because all of a sudden they moved the cheese of the white Jews. The white privileged Jews, all of a sudden, they realized that the cheese was moved, and it was moved by people they don't like. And this thing was moved for the purpose of supporting about 20% of the religious, and at least half of them are very ultra-Orthodox. And they're basically a heavy burden on the Israeli economy. So I think this is really the trigger. You're right. Yossi was right about saying that most of the people who came to demonstrate couldn't care less about what's happening in the West Bank. There's a small fraction, and they try to isolate them because some of them even dared to show the Palestinian flag in an Israeli demonstration. As far as like the issue of the economy, I beg to differ. Look at what happened to the former Prime Minister of England. She was forced out of office in 45 days. And the pressure of the international market, it was not anything that any politician did. The international market have their own decision and they make their own. If they do a run on the bank, so to speak, and they pull the money or take investment or reduce investment or change policies with regards to that, Israel economy might not collapse, but it might go 5 or 10 or 20 years back economically, meaning basically that all of a sudden the standard of living is going to be decreased by 5-10%, especially for the lower levels. The half of the Israeli populace who's struggling as it is right now. So that's why I say, hey, Israel is not going to collapse, no. But they can suffer economically, and this is a big thing. The suffer economically in Israel is not going to be tolerated well if they point the finger at Bibi. So that's my opinion on this thing. Now, I basically tell the Israelis, the camel never sees its own humpback. The Israelis ignore the fact that there's 55 years occupation of the West Bank, and that the Israelis, the nice Israelis, are doing it. Every once in a while it breaks out, but generally speaking, most Israelis don't want to know about the West Bank, they don't care about the West Bank, and most of them say, if you need to kill them all, we don't care. There's a small group in Israelis, small percentage of people who really care. The rest of them, for them, the West Bank is a conversation they don't want to have. You move the cheese, all of a sudden they cannot fly to Europe because they don't have the ability to get visas, or they have to jump through hoops. Or God forbid, the United States will tell them, we put a quota of how many Israelis can come with visa to the United States. Different ballgame. Remember, I told you jokingly years ago, if the European Union wanted to actually impact Israel, they basically don't give the Israelis the visas to come to see the soccer matches in Europe. That will do the revolution in Israel. All the Israeli fans who fly for the soccer games, the European tell them, no, you don't come here because your government is killing Arabs. The revolution happens in 30 seconds in Israel. Bibi and all his people are going to be thrown out. Because one thing they don't even dare, you see, when the Israeli teams play soccer on Saturday, and for years, the religious parties will try to do something about it. And this is the third rail of the Israeli politics. You stop these people from going to see their favorite soccer team playing on Saturday, all bets are off. You're not going to be elected. That's my opinion. So thanks for listening to me.
Thank you, Uri. And I'd like to contribute that the Israeli GDP is like $400 billion, and that's only about 1/3 of 1% of world GDP. So the Israeli economy is only 1/3 of 1% or so of the world economy. And as Uri says, it doesn't have to collapse, but if money leaves, if the bankers pull their money out and they don't invest, Israel still will have a high-tech industry, which will be tied into the world economy, but there'll be a price to pay. Next, who has a hand up? We just lost somebody. Okay, if no one has a hand up, Judy.
On the suggestion that we are right to people, try to get people in Congress to act, Another thing, I hate to quote this guy again, but anyway, it's Americans for Peace Now, APN, where Yossi Alfer is. And I don't even read it that much, but at the end of his column, there's this thing that some woman does where she lists everything that is on the record in Congress, everything that's up in committees, every single thing that they're doing that has any relation to Israel. And like one of the things, this was a couple of weeks ago, I was shocked because comments that people have deliberately put on the record, lots of them from Democrats, all saying Israel has a right to defend itself, anything. That, I mean, this was before the recent stuff, but after a lot of other killings. And there's a whole lot of stuff going on in Congress that, I mean, all the time, there's like 10 things or 20 things coming up in committees about Israel, mostly from the right wingers and the Republicans about what we should do and weapons and how we should help Israel. But it was just disappointing to see all these comments from sort of some of them were liberal Democrats. But I mean, I don't think you can do in Congress. Everyone except for Ilhan Omar and maybe that other person from Minnesota, nobody says anything about Israel. They can't do it. I just don't believe in it. It is interesting, this thing that goes on at the end of the APN column, APN blog or whatever it is, that the stuff that's going on in Congress. I mean, it's like 50 things going on that you'll report once a week. So,
yeah. Thank you, Judy. I'll look it up.
I have a question though. How do they pick this place? Is it Jenin? Is that how it's pronounced? How do they pick that place to go and just attack and kill a bunch of people?
That's my Jenin question. Has been a center for activism for years.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
is the main center of activism
It's a main center of activism. It's a very conservative Muslim city. Ironically, it is where the Freedom Theater, one of the only pure Palestinian dramatic endeavors, is taking place. It was founded by Juliana Mercamis, who was a very outspoken opponent of the Israeli occupation. He was sitting in a car waiting to pick up his son, and he was assassinated, shot through the head. No one has yet found his assassins. But the Freedom Theater is still alive and ongoing and trains young Palestinians, much to the chagrin of the conservative Muslim communities who don't believe in things like drama as a way of stating a message. If you look up Freedom Theater in Jenin, you'll find some more information about it. But as Randy said, Jenin has been a center of protest for many and many a year.
I've never even heard of the city. It shows how much I know. So
you learn something new every day, kiddo.
I sure do about Israel, that's for sure. It's all bad almost. That's nice, but everything else. one more thing while I have the floor. Did anybody read the ADL statement, Jonathan Greenblatt's thing, what he said? Oh my gosh, it's horrible. I mean, it's all about the poor Jews that were killed and the horrible terrorists. And it's
right.
And not even a mention of what was done to the other, first to their side, I mean, to the Palestinians. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the typical response. You know, anytime you always get, a missile was fired from Gaza and hit a building in a southern city in Israel, and the Israeli jets go in and, you know, bomb a few buildings, kill a dozen people. Nobody ever talks about that retaliation. It's always the terrorism sending over the rocket. Mm-hmm. Which has absolutely nothing in common with the aiming ability that the Israelis have on their rockets.
What does ADL stand for?
Anti-Defamation League.
Anti-Defamation League, yeah.
Okay. I just forgot for a second. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Randy has his hand up and Yossi has his hand up. And let me just add about, there's been several comments about whether it does any good to talk to Congress. And it's the only leverage we have in this country. So we've got to do it. It's a long road, but indeed, with enough popular support, Congress does change. So anyway, let's go to Randy.
Well, I'd say that the second thing between, along with the pressure on our government, has to be building public awareness. And I was wondering if LA Jews for Peace is going to be doing anything together with other groups or separately as far as any kind of street actions, anything coming up for, I know there's not a lot of youth in here, but some things for Israeli Apartheid Week in March or anything at the Israeli consulate coming up to the 75th anniversary of the Nakba.
I'll answer, though I don't speak for LA Jews for Peace, that we're interested in supporting things, and we sign on to letters. If we protest, I'd much rather protest the federal building because we want Americans and we want to talk to the United States government rather than at the Israeli consulate where it doesn't do any good. Anyway, let me pass the floor to Yossi, who had his hand up.
Yeah, I agree with Tony that we should go and try to talk to some U.S. politicians. I don't have the illusion that they will come out on the front line and openly criticize Israel, but at least you will know there are different voices here, which is good by itself, you know. Katie Porter, I hope she'll be a senator, not Adam Schiff. She seemed like a decent person. I don't know if she have the juice to challenge the US foreign policy as a new senator, but at least we can find an avenue to talk to her. At least she can hear people like us. What do you have to say? Because she is a fair person, at least from what I saw, fighting big corporations in the United States. This is their main thing. So it's worth a shot. We don't have too many options in the United States. And this is one option. If they're willing to listen to us, we should do it. You know, I just wondering, Tony, what exactly Padilla answer you? Because he said it was a mishmash of something. What does this mean, the mishmash of something? What did he say? You're mute.
I know I'm mute, but there's a piece of information across the top that is keeping me from hitting the mute button and unmute button. By mishmash, I mean that he sent me a letter which started talking about how we've been allies and friends of Israel. He never addressed the specifics of my letter. I was talking to him about Shadi Khoury. I was talking to him about people being arrested in the middle of the night, being beaten up, being brought to jail, and never knowing what the charges are. And he never, ever, ever addressed it. The letter goes on for a full page and a half.
I got the same letter, Tony.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can compare.
Maybe it's not even his writing. Maybe there is a...
No,
I'm sure it's not.
Yeah. And it sounds very much like the kind of stuff that Feinstein will send you, very much like the stuff that I used to get from Adam Schiff when I wrote to Adam Schiff about these matters when I was in his congressional district. It was mercifully not like the stuff that I used to get from Karen Bass. She was a little bit more direct, or she had a staff person who was a little bit more direct. And even one time I got an answer about her from Karen Bass saying, "Thank you very much for this information. I will have my staff check into it." I mean, you don't You don't normally get that from the BS that you get from the big politicians. But yeah. You know, I'm in the middle of writing to Padilla and saying, I sent you a letter. I talked about this. Your letter came back and it was full of baloney. I didn't want to use bullshit.
Are you letter emails?
I might on the next letter. No, I'm sending him a letter by mail.
Oh, that's great.
So
Randy here says,
Excuse me a second, Judy. Randy, you said, do we take part in activities? And there's been talk about trying to have a meeting with
Seville.
No, no, the woman running for Porter, with Katie Porter. If Seville sets up a meeting with Porter, we'll send one or two reps to it. We'll join your meeting, and that way makes your meeting stronger. If you can set that up.
It's something we can try. I don't know that there are any Seville members who are currently active in our leadership group who are in her district. So that might make it a little bit more difficult, but it's certainly something that I can take to our next meeting.
But Brandy, you say on the chat that she won't get on the ballot if she comes out for Israel. So it almost seems
I think that's
fair,
I think
to
that's
push
true.
Under pressure.
No, I think that's true of any candidate. But if she's going to be running and she's announced, then I think that's a perfectly valid reason to go to any candidate and say, well, where do you stand on the issue of Israel and Palestine?
And then she says she's on Palestine's side, then she won't ever get elected and she can't do anything.
Right.
But
that's unfortunately very true.
But you don't know if they're sympathetic to the Palestinian view,
right.
What they do behind the scenes and in the coke closets and all the rest of it. You know, it's a long, long struggle. And it's complicated by the fact that both Republicans and Democrats are so much pro-Israel that they just don't want to change to begin with because they sincerely believe that Israel is in the right.
Well, you know, not all Democrats like this, because in the
past... not all, Yossi. I don't mean that, but yeah. So many of them, a lot of them.
Mainstream Democrat, yes, but many of the progressive caucus take some time more critical and signed on different letters about the issue of the expelling Palestinians and house demolitions. They did sign letters, so... But because Katie Porter now running for the Senate, I don't think that her district it's an issue anymore. As a matter of fact, I just got an email today. You know, I sent her $100 because I really want her to win.
Right.
I have to judge between her and Adam Schiff. She come first.
Right.
You know. So I got an email today that tomorrow at 4 p.m., I can maybe forward to you, there will be a Zoom meeting with her and people can ask all kind of questions. You know, if I'll come an issue of the Palestinians, in order not to put her right away on defensive, I'll tell her that I'm from this region and I support the rights of all people for peace and democracy and human rights, because this is the key words for liberal Democrat, human rights and democracy. You know, and in this situation, 5 million people live either under dictatorship or under siege. If this, she think it's a fair way of dealing with people, that people live for 55 years under dictatorship, military dictatorship, where the land is taken. If somebody who believe in democracy and human rights, how are you going to deal with it? You know? Anyway, I'm gonna try to see how the meeting is. Maybe you have to send a question. You know, the way politician works is sometimes you have to send a letter ahead of time rather than direct. So I don't know how she's going to handle tomorrow, but I think I told already Jeff, but I have to do it, to call her office and see if a meeting can be done between, let's say, LA Jews and her office
right,
and see if she will agree to meet with us. And just saying in general concerning the Israeli-Palestinian issues, and we'd like to have some an open conversations about this. Yeah. See how she reacts, you know. And I think maybe you're right. Maybe you have to focus on few of them and just let them know that we want to have a conversation about this. You know, we don't have too many choices.
Yossi, I didn't mean to undercut what you were doing, I did put in the chat the text of a letter that I got from Padilla regarding Israel-Palestine. And as you can see, it's all about the two-state solution, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Right. You know, even this, we can ask them, well, the situation on the ground on this, what is your roadmap to get to two states?
Yeah.
Beside repeating the rhetoric, two states, what is your roadmap? Right. Do you have any roadmap, you know, with the fact that the Israeli government, the current one, made very clear that all the land between the river and the sea exclusively rights of the Jewish people. This is what they said in a government, you know, points. I don't know how to say the government, not talking point, but
basic law.
Basic ideology or understanding. That they declare that all the land of Israel is exclusively only the Jewish people have a right.
And Netanyahu himself made that statement.
And this is their policy. So how can you do to this reality? What is your roadmap to get to the two states? You know, just beside repeating the talking point, two states.
You know, it's very interesting just to bring in something. But you know, last month the former prime minister of Germany, the woman, I've forgotten her name, revealed that the whole
Merkel
Minsk agreement that was struck in 2014-2015 was really just a delaying tactic, and they really weren't serious about it. And anybody who's studied the whole two-state solution can see very clearly that that whole thing is just rhetoric to cover up what actually was going on, which is an expansion of the settlements and eventually getting to Netanyahu saying it's all of Israel from the river to the sea. I mean, he was very clear about that. Well, at any rate, I've got to go.
Okay, I'm pledged. I'm going to call her office. Okay?
Yeah, send me that email, Yossi, so I can see about signing on to that Zoom meeting.
Who else wants? Maybe I'll send it to Jeff because I don't have everybody's email.
Okay.
And he will send to everybody, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
And the meeting is tomorrow at 4 p.m.
4 p.m., okay.
Yeah.
Good, because I'll be back.
Thank you, Yossi.
Good night.
Maybe I received it because I gave her $100. So maybe.
Yeah, I gave her $100 too, but I haven't gotten any invitation.
Maybe check your email because it just came very recent.
Oh, okay. I'll check my email again.
Yeah. Give her a couple thousand, maybe she'll answer.
Judy, thanks for the reference to APN.
Well,
I'd forgotten where Yossi Alper was from.
Yeah, I got also email from him. He's for a long time a commentator for Peace Now. I just want to tell you that Peace Now is an organization in Israel move more to the left because in the past, they were also trying to be careful not to deal with this, but many organizations, human rights organization, and Jewish Arab organization and most of them, they form a block in every demonstration. They said, if you want to be part of the block under the slogan, there is no democracy with occupations. Mm-hmm. This is their main slogan. Yep. And I saw the name of the organization, so every human rights organization, and then I saw Peace Now in Israel also sign on this. So they're part of this block, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll understand now after what happened and the laws they make. Already sold, at least in Haaretz. I don't know how much it's really reflecting. But after they passed the law today, I mean, the law, they need two more votes, but it's going to pass.
Yeah.
A lot of people who wrote, it's a response to article. It's very common in Israel. The people responding to articles, opinion, or whatever. And they said, you know, it's just showing they criticized Lapid and Gantz voting for it. And they said, where is your democracy? Is this your democracy denying Israeli citizenship? And you're going with Ben-Gvir and Netanyahu? Shame on you. Yeah. You know, you're attacking them, and here you are following them in anti-democratic law. And the people who approve it was like 10 to 1 who said, mm-hmm. yes, you're right. So, you know, I don't know how much, but it might make some impact of many Israelis who come to those demonstrations, and they will feel maybe uncomfortable with very extreme anti-democratic law, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm going to check out what 972 has got to say, and I'm going to send off a communication to Hagai Matar, see what he's got to say.
I just saw an article by him in Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
About the demonstration.
A local call?
Huh?
A local call?
Yeah, a local call in Hebrew, right.
Okay.
Okay, so
I
talk to the office of Katie Porter, I'll let you know how the reaction is.
Good, I'll check my email.
Okay.
So thanks for putting this together, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Tony. And,
okay, so thank you all for coming. This was a very interesting chat. And I'll have the recording. I'll have an email within a couple of hours with the recording.
Okay. Jeff, can I just ask real quick? So I've been meaning to ask, Jews are allowed, how do they prove you're Jewish when you go into Israel? I mean, if I want to go to Israel, how do they know I'm Jewish?
You bring a letter.
They've just asked me when I've come.
They just ask you, are you Jewish? And you say yes. So anybody can say yes.
Yeah, but I think... some of them saying you bring a letter from your local rabbi and this will be a...
I don't have a rabbi.
Well, no. Judy's talking about, if you want to be a tourist, all you got to do is say what you want.
No, I want to be a citizen.
If you want to become a citizen, you're going to need a letter from your rabbi.
Yeah.
Need a letter from your rabbi. You're going to need a birth certificate.
You don't need if you don't have a rabbi, it's not so difficult. You go to any rabbi. Even a progressive rabbi. And
birth certificate doesn't say you're Jewish.
No, it shows where you were born and with the rabbi's testimony.
Okay, I'll have to find a rabbi if I want to become a citizen.
Good luck becoming a citizen.
You really want to do it, Judy?
No, I just heard about how you do it. They let in Jewish people. I mean,
if you do live in Jaffa, please keep your sanity.
My daughter had a boyfriend. His name was he had a Jewish name and he had looked Jewish. He was totally not Jewish. I mean, it just occurs to me that that was one of her boyfriends once.
But I want to tell you something interesting. You know, I'm a member of the Abraham Initiative board. In last meeting last May, I met one of the staff members. She's an Arab woman who lived most of her life in Australia. Her parents immigrated to Australia when she was maybe four or 5 years old. So now she has an Australian accent. And they came back and now they live in Haifa. And she kind of... so she called the Israeli absorbing ministry. You know, the one who deal with the new immigrants. And she told them, look, I'm a daughter of a returned citizens. I want to know what is my benefits. Oh, you'll get this. And she said, sounds good. And then they said, what is your name? She gave them, of course, names that have an Arabic name. And right. She said, was it totally silent on the other side? And she said, what's going on? I'm a returned citizen. And they told her, you know what? I think you have to go to another institutions. We're not going to, you're not qualified. And then she asked him, because I have an Arabic name? And she said, was totally silent on the other side. You know, because the Ministry of Absorbing New Immigrants, they don't say that benefits it's only for Jews only. It just said returned citizens. So she came with an Arab family, returned citizens. And she said they were so, and she called them again, and they were just in disarray the way they talked to her. They just couldn't handle her, you know.
So in other words, her parents were 48 Palestinians?
No. They immigrated to Israel in maybe in the 70s, to Australia in the 70s or 80s.
But they had been Israeli citizens.
Yeah, from Haifa. They just returned from Haifa after being, I don't know, 20, 25 years in Australia. Now she's a young woman in her mid-30s, and she's working for Abraham Initiative on the international department because of her good English. But she just told me the story, you know, while we're sitting in a bus. You know, if you look at her, you think she's a good Ashkenaz Jew because she's very light skinned, blonde, and with Australian accent, with Arabic name.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway. It was just amazing. So, in you know, stories like this, it's good to tell liberal Jews in the United States.
Yeah.
Is this, you know, how deep is discrimination go? You know, a simple things like this, return citizens.
Okay, I gotta go.
Bye, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.